Ian has taken over. It's with me, George Norrie. Alternative realities. For years, it has been man's quest. In a moment, we will talk with an expert, physicist Lawrence M. Krauss, about hiding in the mirror. Professor Lawrence Krauss is professor of physics, professor of astronomy, and chair of the physics department at Case Western Reserve University. He is an internationally known theoretical physicist with wide research interests. Now, they include the interface between elementary particle physics and cosmology, where his studies include the early universe, the nature of dark matter, general relativity, and neutrino astrophysics. Professor Krauss is the author of six popular books, including the one I'm holding right now, Hiding in the Mirror, and has lectured at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, the National Museum of Natural History, and the Museum of Natural History in New York, as well as serving on the boards of three different science and natural history museums. He is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Professor, welcome to the program. How are you?
Pretty good. It's nice to be back.
We're going to talk with you about a lot of things here. Of course, you know, when we talk about dimensions, and we have the three prime dimensions here, a lot of scientists now are beginning to think that this fourth dimension indeed could be a real reality. Why are they changing?
Well, let's step back a little bit. We actually know the universe as we know it is four-dimensional. It's got three dimensions of space and one dimension of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tied together, and we've known that for about 100 years now, almost 100 years since the work of Einstein, that we have to tie space and time together into something called space-time. Now, and they really are, and one person's space, in some sense, can be another person's time. That's what Einstein discovered. It's part of the beauty and part of the marvel of relativity. Now, the interesting question is, can there be more than three spatial dimensions? And the answer is, we don't know. But recent work in physics has suggested that, to some people, that you could solve some fundamental problems related to the nature of gravity if there were extra spatial dimensions. And, of course, it's the basis of something called string theory, which you've probably talked about at various times in your program.
Sure.
And the interesting thing is that there are very fascinating mathematical reasons to be thinking about these extra dimensions, but we have no evidence whatsoever that any of them actually exist, nor any predictions at this point that can clearly point to their existence. In general, there are specific models that might be testable in the next generation of accelerators, particle accelerators, like the one being built in Geneva right now that should come online in a couple of years. And that would be very exciting if one of the signals, in some sense, for an extra dimension would be if when particles were smashed together in this accelerator at very high energy, some of the energy from those particles disappeared and in fact, left our dimensions and went to another dimension. And that would be a potential signal. The reasons it's kind of interesting. Gravity, as Einstein first told us, is very different than the other forces of nature. Gravity is due to the fact that space can actually curve in the presence of matter and energy. And it was a remarkable discovery. It was his greatest discovery, general relativity. The fact that space can actually curve, it can expand, it can contract, it's dynamical. And therefore, gravity, in some sense, is different than the other forces because it's related to some property of space itself. The other forces, like electricity and magnetism and the strong force and the weak force, aren't related to the properties of space. They're related to fields that exist within space. And this dichotomy, this sort of separation between gravity and the other forces, was well known and has been a source of some frustration to physicists because gravity never seems to fit in when we try to think about how to unify all the forces in nature. And it was suggested first about, by scientists at least, and I should say that this idea of extra dimensions has been around for a long time in different contexts in art and literature, and in my new book, Hiding in the Mirror, I try and talk for those. Some of them are fascinating. We can perhaps go into them.
Sure.
But the science sort of began around 1919 when a mathematician and then a few years later, a physicist named Kaluza and Klein suggested that maybe electromagnetism could be understood as kind of a, also related to space, but not the space that we live in, but if there was a fifth dimension, a fourth dimension of space, and we couldn't perceive it directly, then they were able to show that the equations would be such that the remnant of that gravity that we couldn't perceive in the fifth dimension would appear to us to look identical to electromagnetism. It was an amazing mathematical discovery. And of course, you may wonder why people haven't heard of Kaluza and Klein if it was so amazing. Well, it turned out their theory wasn't quite right. But that basis has been, that idea that somehow we could understand the other forces as arising due to the existence of extra dimensions that we cannot perceive. And then, of course, the question becomes, where, if they're there, well, how come we can't perceive them?
Right.
How can they be hidden?
And where might it be?
Exactly. And that idea, and we'll get to that in a second, but that idea has cropped up over and over again in the 20th century, and as I say, and most recently in its incarnation in string theory. And when string theory was developed, in order to try and solve the mathematical problems of fundamental particle physics, a host of extra dimensions were required in this theory. And the argument was, well, if the extra dimensions are curled up so small that you can't see them, then they can be hidden. It'd be like thinking of a soda straw. Think about a soda straw, and it's got two dimensions. You can go along the soda straw, or you can go around the soda straw, okay? So it's got two dimensions.
Right.
If, however, the radius of the soda straw gets so small that you literally can't see it, it looks just like a line. You
mm-hmm.
can't see that extra dimension.
Exactly.
So a two-dimensional object now looks to you like a one-dimensional object. And so think of that with five dimensions. Is that fifth dimension is somehow above every point in space. If there was an extra dimension that was curled up really small, that we'd never be able to notice it, and our accelerators wouldn't have yet been able to probe it. And that was the argument, and it was one way to hide it. Of course, the question then becomes, why do the four dimensions of space we live in, or three dimensions of space, why are they so big and this extra dimension so small? The answer traditionally has been, well, we don't know. But fascinatingly, what's also happened in the last, say, 7 years or so, it's been realized that that is not the only way to hide extra dimensions. It's possible to actually have extra dimensions that are infinitely big, more like the extra dimensions of science fiction, like in Star Trek, where the aliens come in and out of extra dimensions, or in one of my favorite movies,
sure.
Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension.
One of mine.
And what is amazing is that is possible, too, and you can still hide those extra dimensions, if somehow all the particles that make us up and the forces, electromagnetism and the strong force, the weak force, and it's possible to do this, are restricted to exist in our three dimensions of space. But gravity can probe all the dimensions of the universe. Then you can show that it's possible, not only possible for these other dimensions to be hidden, but in fact, it might solve some fundamental problems in particle physics, like why the forces are very different. Gravity, for example, is the weakest force in nature. Your listeners may not realize that, because when they wake up in the morning, gravity seems like the strongest force in nature trying to get out of bed. But in fact, it's much, much weaker than any of the other forces. And the physicist Richard Feynman gave a great example for trying to understand that. He said, take someone up to the top of a tall building and throw them off. And he didn't want you to really do this. The gravity would take, say it's 200 feet high, gravity would take 200 feet to accelerate that person down to the ground. Okay?
Yeah.
But it's electromagnetism that stops them in the last fraction of an inch. Because the reason you don't go through the ground, the reason you stop, is not because the ground is solid. Of course, it looks solid, but mostly it's empty space. It's actually the electric forces of the electrons in the atoms in the ground that repel the atoms in your body that stop you, and you don't even make a dent in the concrete. So electromagnetism is so much stronger than gravity that it's... And that has been a mystery in particle physics. Why are the forces so different in strength? It turns out a recent proposal for how to do that would to explain that great disparity would suggest that, in fact, gravity really leaks off into other dimensions, and that's one of the reasons why it's so weak. These are fascinating ideas, and they're being explored, but I want to emphasize that right now there's not a shred of evidence, of empirical evidence, for any of them.
Well, let's look at two different facets. First of all, you know, we live primarily in the three dimensions,
Most of us
do. Okay, yeah, and sometimes four. So as we evolve, as we go on our daily routine, we're in these three dimensions. If these other dimensions do not exist, how would that affect us if they don't exist? Would it have any effect on us at all?
No. I mean, that's why they're hidden right now.
All right.
The point is that if they had an observable effect on us that we could discern immediately now and test, then of course we wouldn't be talking about this as a hypothetical speculation.
Sure.
Now, the point is, it may be that we can only understand certain aspects of the universe that we live in because of these extra dimensions. It may be, for example, that gravity is weak because of these extra dimensions. So if these extra dimensions didn't exist, gravity would be as strong as the other forces in nature, and the world would be very different. In fact, we'd be dead because gravity would be so strong, we'd be crushed by the Earth. So if these ideas are right, then certain characteristics of the world as we see it that we kind of accept or take for granted are properties, are due to aspects of this hidden universe that we can't see. And we just don't know the answer, whether it's just that, you know, they have no impact whatsoever, or they really produce everything we see, we just don't know it.
If there are hidden dimensions, hidden universes, what might they be like if we were able to understand that?
Well, again, the fascinating thing, I suppose, is that it is possible that there are, in these extra dimensions, other four-dimensional universes like our own, which house galaxies and stars and planets and living
things. Just as physical as we are today.
Just as physical as we are today. It could also be that there are other four-dimensional or six-dimensional or three-dimensional universes where the laws of physics are totally different, completely different, where gravity isn't strong and electromagnetism is different and the particles that make up those universes are different. It's quite possible that in such a higher dimensional space, there could be a multitude, in fact, an infinite number of different universes, literally, some of which may resemble our own, some of which are completely different.
Why would the law book of physics in other dimensions be different? Why shouldn't it follow the same routine that we have?
The rationale is the following, that if, let's say, we, as some string theorists would say, that we live in an underlying, say, 10-dimensional universe, which is the current thing, that's about actually 11-dimensional, most recently in string theory. That's a lot of extra dimensions, right?
Sure.
There's seven extra dimensions you got to find. Well, now, what can happen is that the theory could say, well, the mathematics of the theory will say, if you let the laws of physics in this 10-dimensional space sort of settle down,
mm-hmm.
what you'll find is that it's like if I have a water and I freeze it, it can form a beautiful crystal structure like a snowflake.
Sure.
Or it can form various other kinds of structures like snow, like ice, or without those beautiful crystals. Okay. And so if you, as a sort of the system relaxes, different parts of it can relax to different configurations. Okay. So that here's another way to think about it. If you look at your window pane on a frosty day, you'll see some beautiful crystals moving along in one direction, and then another part of the window pane, you'll see some crystals moving off in another
mm-hmm,
direction,
mm-hmm.
right? And so as the water has frozen on your window, and the crystal structure is the sort of lowest energy state. It's at a certain temperature. It's what water wants to do. It wants to turn into ice. But certain places, the ice crystals start growing in one direction. In other places, they start growing in other directions, right? And it's just kind of random.
Now, but they're all ice crystals.
But they're all ice crystals. But, for example, if you lived on one of those ice crystals, if you're a microscopic entity, you would think that one direction was very special.
The one I was on.
Well, and the direction the ice crystal was going on. And your universe, somehow, all the laws would be different in that direction because all the water molecules would be aligned along that
mm-hmm,
direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they would seem different in one direction than another. Okay? But in another, if you happen to be living in another ice crystal, then in fact, the laws of different physics would be different in a different direction. Okay? And so you have to kind of think of this higher dimensional space as relaxing down, and different parts of it can relax to different configurations. And it's possible, although one doesn't know because we don't have the mathematical tools yet to know the answer, to know if any of this is more than science fiction. But it's possible that different regions could relax to different configurations where it would appear that it might be in that configuration, the laws of physics would appear different. It might be that in that relaxed state, the lightest particle would not be stable particle would not be, say, an electron, but it would be something else. And so it's basically like the laws of physics are almost environmental.
And what you're saying is, like the crystals on this window pane, that there could be hundreds of universe/crystals, other dimensions, with planets, with beings.
Or with no beings.
Beings, exactly.
In fact, one of the arguments that's been made recently, and some physicists hate this argument, I'm not very fond of it myself, is that it could ultimately be that the theory itself would not predict that the universe has to look the way it does. It could predict an infinite number of different universes with different laws of physics that all satisfy the same fundamental theory. And the only reason our universe appears the way it does is because if it were any different, we wouldn't have evolved in it. Namely, if it were significantly different, so certain laws, certain quantities were dramatically changed, then galaxies wouldn't have formed in our universe. If there wouldn't be galaxies, there wouldn't be stars. And if there wouldn't be stars, there wouldn't be planets. If there wouldn't be planets, there wouldn't be astronomers and scientists. And so it's not too surprising that in our universe, which has planets and astronomers and stars, that the laws of physics are the way they are. It almost sounds like a tautology, but it's like the question asking, if an intelligent fish might ask the question, why is the universe made of water? And you say, well, if it weren't made of water, Mr. Intelligent Fish, you would be around to ask the question.
Yeah.
And so it sounds very slimy, and forgive the analogy to fish, but or fishy, if you wish. But it's something that some physicists are actually taking seriously, the idea that perhaps the fundamental theory, be it string theory or something else, doesn't fix the laws of physics, but it allows them to vary over many, many different universes. And certain universes have life in them, and other universes don't have life in them. And it turns out that life is only possible if certain physical quantities, like the strength of gravity and the strength of electromagnetism and other things, are fixed within a certain range. And that's why we find our weird universe with a very weak laws of gravity and very, much stronger electromagnetism.
Could some of them be empty? I mean, with nothing in there at all?
Exactly. Some of them could be completely empty. And some of them could collapse. Some of them could be expanding. Some of them could be, and not only that, but some of them could be have maybe five large dimensions.
Could they? Could
three
they?
Large dimensions or two large dimensions.
Could they affect us?
That's an interesting question. In certain models, they could. In fact, it turns out these ideas are called. We tend to call these sub-universes, like the one we live in. Brains, which is like a membrane, and we're in a four-dimensional membrane, if you wish, in a higher dimensional space, if these ideas are right. Well, as two brains come together or go apart, there can be an interaction between them that could, in fact, produce phenomenal effects within one of those brains. But people have argued that maybe you might be able to explain certain features of the Big Bang
And I've got to ask you about that later on tonight.
Absolutely. And cosmology, of course, being one of my areas, is something I'm quite interested in. But it could be, for example, one of the biggest mysteries, probably the biggest mystery in science right now, in physics certainly, is this really weird thing that we have discovered that most of the energy of the universe resides in empty space.
So hold that thought right there, and we'll be back with you, Professor Lawrence Krauss. Fascinating discussion with you. Hiding in the Mirror is his latest book. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Real science tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And with our special guest tonight, Professor Lawrence Krauss, we'll be right back with him. We'll talk about his thoughts of an empty universe, the space in the universe, in a moment at Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you tonight, Professor Lawrence Krauss. Professor, let's pick up where we left off right before the break.
Sure. Okay, the what I was talking about was the biggest mystery in physics, which is the remarkable fact that was discovered, been discovered over the last 5 or 6 years, that the dominant energy in the universe resides in empty space, in places where there's nothing. That's no particles, no radiation, no anything. There's more energy in empty space than there is in everything we see in the universe. And that is, and energy, when you put it in empty space, it turns out, according to general relativity, is gravitationally repulsive, not attractive. And it is causing the observed expansion of the universe to accelerate. And that acceleration has been measured. And that we have no idea why it's there. And we have no idea why there's that much of it, or in fact what will happen to it. And it's and that has sent the particle physics community and the cosmology communities into a flurry, because we really, it's just so inexplicable and so surprising that people have been thinking of every possible way, mechanism to try and explain it. And of course, because some people work in extra dimensions or on physics of extra dimensions, they've suggested that perhaps there's an extra dimensional explanation. Namely, you could argue, it turns out, that if two of these four-dimensional brains were approaching each other, moving apart, there could be such an extra force that would be interpreted, that would look like it was an energy of empty space. Unfortunately, however, those mechanisms generally don't work very well, but maybe when we if it's really true, if we understood it better, then this weird energy that we're measuring could, in fact, be a remnant of extra dimensions. We just don't know.
Now, this isn't dark matter, is it?
This is not dark matter. It's dark energy, which is even stranger than dark matter. In fact, dark matter is something, I've worked on. I've written a whole book on it. Dark matter is very interesting and very exotic, and it's in your if we're right, it's in your studio and in my house right now. It's the fact that when we look at it, we can actually weigh our galaxy, and we can weigh all other galaxies as well. We can determine their total mass, and there's at least 10 times as much matter as we can account for everything that's visible.
Doesn't make any sense.
Well, as crazy as that is, it's less crazy than dark energy, because it turns out elementary particle physics ideas give lots of possible candidates that would be not so visible. In fact, we know, elementary particles that would not be observable. We know such particles exist. It turns out, for example, particles called neutrinos are emitted by the sun as part of the nuclear reactions that power the sun. And neutrinos are so weakly interacting, they go right through the Earth without even knowing it was there. And every second of every day, about 6,000 billion neutrinos are going through your body every second. During the day, they're coming down from the sky. At night, when you're asleep, they're coming right up through the Earth, through your house, through your bed, and through your body. So think of that tonight when you're trying to sleep.
You know, I cannot see my cave facility in St. Louis. I'm here in Los Angeles right now. But I know it's there. Mm-hmm. Is it almost the same when you talk about this, these other dimensions, what could be out there? We know it's there. We just can't see these things?
Well, not quite, because we don't know they're there. We have suspicions. And as you know, sometimes when you have suspicions that something's there, sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't.
Right.
And that's the situation we're in with science. We have suspicions that this stuff is there that we just can't see for one reason or another. And, the dark matter, we know it's there. We have so much evidence that we know the dark matter is there. The dark energy, that really appears to be there. The extra dimensions, we don't know.
What will it take for us to finally figure it out? I mean, is it technology?
I'd be doing it, but
I mean, what will do it? Technology, experiments,
yeah.
Better computers. What might do it?
Well, one of the great hopes of certain people who've been working in extra dimensions is that we might as we build particle accelerators that have higher and higher energy, that means they can explore space over smaller and smaller scales, that the next generation of particle accelerator, which is, as I say, built in Geneva in Switzerland, it's being built there because our Congress, in their wisdom a decade ago, decided to cancel the wonderful project in Texas that was being built to do this. But in any case, it's being built, and in a couple of years it will be running. And the hope is that we might, it just might be possible that it could reach scales of energy where you could actually either see energy leak out into extra dimensions or produce new kinds of black holes, new gravitational objects that actually, again, probe these extra dimensions. And so predictions have been made for what might happen at these accelerators. And that would be very exciting because that would really, as I say, be definitive evidence. Unfortunately, it doesn't work the other way around. If we don't see that stuff, it just means that the scale of those extra dimensions is, if they exist, is beyond the reach of our current accelerators.
Right.
And to be pessimistic, which perhaps it's worth doing every now and then.
it grounds us, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. The original versions of string theory that predict the extra dimensions predicted these extra dimensions would, in order to probe them, you'd have to probe scales that are 19 orders of magnitude. That's a one with 19 zeros after it, smaller than the size of a proton. About a billion times smaller than we can detect with our best accelerators now. And even a particle accelerator that went right around the Earth wouldn't be able to produce the energies necessary to probe that. And so that is very pessimistic because it suggests that this may be purely theoretical for a long time.
What do you think of string theory and some of the work of Dr. Michio Kaku, who comes on the program quite often?
I think that string theory is an interesting area of theoretical research that thus far has been completely unsuccessful. It's been a great failure. It looked like it had great potential to do many things based on certain mathematical aspects of the theory, and many of the practitioners, including Michio, had hoped and claimed 20 years ago that we would have a theory of everything that could explain everything. And thus far, it appears to be mostly a theory of nothing. It is a theory that, as we've learned more about it, we learn it's more complex than we thought. We learn we understand it less than we thought. And we've learned that, so far, it hasn't yet been able to make any viable predictions. And so it is a theory that has been highly touted in the public. And it is a fascinating theory for physicists to be thinking about. But right now, it has done more or less absolutely nothing. It has not explained a single thing about the universe that we can measure. And I don't mean this in a pejorative sense.
I
just want to add some balance. It is fascinating to think about, and maybe one day it will have a success that will actually explain something.
Are we leading up to its theory, to its existence, or are we just not getting any closer to that?
Well, it looks, unfortunately, it looks like the more we work on it, the farther away we're getting, because we're learning that the theory, the mathematics, is even more complex than people imagined, and what it implies is not so clear. And so there's a legion of young, very bright theoretical physicists working on string theory, and some that are not so young, and they're working very hard, and they are, and many of them are convinced the theory is so attractive mathematically to them, it solves some mathematical problems. In particular, it can get rid of nasty properties of gravity when you apply the laws of quantum mechanics to it, and that's one of the things that's driven them to think it might be right. But for example, two decades ago, it looked like the theory predicted the universe was 10-dimensional. Well, now, as we understand it, it looks like the theory suggests the universe is maybe 11-dimensional. Moreover, it looks like maybe even strings themselves, which have been touted so much as what elementary particles are made of, they themselves may not be fundamental. They may just be an illusion. And so everything is in flux. And unfortunately, I have to say, I guess I'd say, that if you were being fair, you'd say the theory right now is in the doldrums. It hasn't really made the kind of progress that
anybody thought
people would have liked.
Well, let me ask you this then. Because there's so much unknown, yet there appears to be so much order. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, in my limited knowledge of the kind of physics that you possess, there does seem to be some order with everything that's out there. It's almost as if everything has a reason. Does this lead you to conclude that there could be a divine creator in all of this, as opposed to anything that has happened randomly?
Well, actually, interesting question is, maybe you can tell me what order you see, because a lot of people look at the universe, a lot of physicists and other scientists, and don't see that order. We see a fascinating universe, but we don't see, well, there's a difference in order. We don't see evidence for purpose, I guess is the way to put it. I mean, for example, take a snowflake again. You look at that through a magnifying glass, you could not find anything that looked more ordered or perfect.
True.
But we know very simply that the laws of chemistry and physics are such that when you put water molecules and cool them down, crystals form with that kind of structure, and we can understand how crystals form to form a snowflake. So the appearance of design is very subtle. Let me give you another example. You know, you might say, well, that's fine, but let me look at a piece of architecture. Clearly, that's designed. Well, let's take Buckminster Fuller and his beautiful geodesic dome.
Sure.
Those are beautifully designed, right?
Yes.
Well, unless nature does it, there's a molecule called Buckminster Fullerene, which is a molecule called carbon-60, just 60 carbon atoms, and they naturally form, in fact, in soot, into a structure that it looks like a geodesic dome. And they're actually very interesting, and they could be very useful in a lot of technological applications. The people who discovered them won the Nobel Prize, in fact. But they, again, form just by the laws of physics. And so the appearance of design is, you have to be very careful when you say something looks ordered and therefore there's purpose. There's a difference between order and purpose. And I think it's really important to realize that science doesn't really say anything about purpose.
Well, I guess, and let me explain it a little more. Mm-hmm. You know, on this planet, for example, the moon needed to be a certain distance from the planet in order to keep things in somewhat order.
Yeah.
Here. Water is needed. It's the soup of life.
Sure.
I mean, we needed the right kind of atmosphere. We needed
Absolutely. So
many things to work in order for things to be what they are. And to me, that just doesn't happen with a roll of the dice.
Well, that's an interesting question. Why? I mean, you're absolutely right. It turns out there are all these conditions that are required. But there's a few things. First of all, we don't know whether those are the only conditions that are required. We know that they were sufficient for life as we know it to have evolved on Earth.
Right.
But could there be another set of conditions that would allow life forms that are vastly different to evolve? Maybe.
Maybe.
We don't know. So therefore, is it so special? We don't know. It could be that the reason that life, like our life, evolved here is precisely because those conditions existed, not that you require those conditions for life. Or, so that's one possibility, right? It could just be that, you know, there's lots of different kinds of conditions and life forms and lots of different kinds of conditions. But the other possibility could be that, in fact, you require all of these things for life to form. You require water, organic material, sunlight, a moon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A Jupiter
distance from your sun.
Away. And yeah. Jupiter is very important because it turned out to eject most of what would have been the comets and asteroids, eat up some of them and eject the other ones under the Kuiper belt.
It's like a
Otherwise,
shield out there.
We'd be bombarded regularly by huge comets.
Exactly.
So all of these things are fascinating. But the other thing that to realize about the universe that's kind of hard to realize is it's really big and it's really old. And there are 100 billion stars in our galaxy. Most of them have solar systems around them. And in the observable universe, there are 400 billion galaxies, each of which have hundreds of billions of stars in them. And so even extremely rare things happen all the time. For example, let me give you an example. Stars explode every now and then. Fortunately for us, they don't explode too often. Yeah, exactly. And our sun, it turns out, won't explode. It'll just sort of puff up at about 5 billion years, which reminds me of a cosmology joke I'll tell you in a bit if you want. But
Sure. Anyway,
so stars explode, and it turns out they explode so rarely that in each galaxy of 100 billion stars, like our own, one star explodes about every 100 years. So you got 100 billion stars, and even then, only one explodes every 100 years or so. So you might think, well, they're so rare, we won't see them. But if you take your hand and stretch it out, and curl your fingers up so that you have a little hole you can look through that's about the size of a dime.
Like a little telescope without the lens.
Yeah, that's exactly. About the size of a dime, an arm length away from you, and held it up to a dark spot in the sky. In that dark spot in the sky, with a powerful enough telescope, you could see about 100,000 galaxies. And if you calculate it, well, once per 100 years per galaxy, with 100,000 galaxies on a given night, you're bound, if you look at those that region, to see 10 stars explode. And so here are these really rare things, but the universe is so big that the rare things are happening all the time. And so it could be that life requires very specific conditions to evolve, but even then, it's quite likely that those conditions exist in lots of different places. And the other thing you might say is, as Carl Sagan used to say, if it's really true that we're the only life evolved, all the conditions were created purposefully right here so that we could survive and exist, and we're unique, then it's an awful waste of space.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I tell you what, though, it just boggles your mind trying to figure it out.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I like doing it. That's why I get paid to do it, I guess. These are fascinating questions, and what is even more fascinating, perhaps, is that using physics and experiment, we who are stuck here on Earth and have not left the solar system, nevertheless, with our telescopes and our accelerators, have learned about the universe back to the earliest moments of the Big Bang and out to scales billions of light years across. And so I find it fascinating that we here in this random corner in the middle of nowhere in the universe, endowed with consciousness and intelligence, have been able to use that to learn about the universe.
And we're learning more and more.
Yes, and that's why, for me, it's worth talking about this. It's the greatest human adventure. That's one of the reasons why I write books and talk about it. I think more people should learn what's happening. And one of the reasons why I'm so sad, in some sense, that I spend a lot of my time fighting attacks on science by groups that are, for example, trying to change the teaching of science in high schools to get rid of evolution and things like that. And would I rather be spending my time talking about the true wonders of the universe?
And do you ever, because I find myself doing this, ask the simple question, why? Why is it even here? Why are we even here?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but in some sense, it's important to realize that that's not quite a scientific question. Science really addresses the question of how, not why. Science is limited. So we ask how things work, but really not why things work. We often use the terminology why. This is why the moon does this or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we're really asking how it does it. And so these are the question of why we're here, the question of all those questions are fascinating, but on the whole, they're beyond the domain of science. And it's really important to realize both not only the beauty of science, but the limitations of science. Science is not everything, and scientists often forget that. It does a disservice to science to try and extend it beyond its domain of validity, just like it does a disservice to science for other realms, sometimes religious, to try and impose upon the scientific domain.
Let's talk a little bit about time travel, Professor, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.